Bloomberg Radio News.
Knowing what you put in your own vegetables and you didn't use no pesticides and anything like that, growing it all natural, really, it's like, oh, maybe that'd be a good idea.
A community garden in South LA is so competitive, it has a waiting list. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, March 29th, 2011. I'm Sarah Erickson. The Orange County Transit Authority will no longer be using the auditing firm Mayer Hoffman McCann. That's because it's the same firm that audited the City of Bell's financial records, records showing that Bell's officials were paying themselves exorbitant amounts of money. The auditing firm has been under a contract with Orange County for 3 years. The Los Angeles City Council voted today to approve plans for a massive redevelopment of the Wilshire Grand Hotel. Mark Shore reports on what this means for the city.
After 2 years of planning, a 13-to-1 vote approved plans for a groundbreaking development in downtown Los Angeles. The estimated $1.2 billion project will include a 45-story reconstruction of the Wilshire Grand Hotel with an accompanying 65-story office building. Councilman Dennis Zine.
I'm really amazed at how anyone would be opposed to this, how anyone in their right mind would be opposed to this project that's going to bring jobs, economy, and help downtown Los Angeles.
The agreement is between the city and two private companies, Thomas Properties and Korean Air. Councilmember Jan Perry says the project will bring in $22 million a year for the city's general fund, starting in 2015. Developers say that it will bring in more than 7,000 construction jobs and 6,000 permanent jobs. The head of the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor, Maria Elena Durazo, is in full support.
We ask you to not only support it, but to hold it up as an example that we want all employers and all developers to follow.
The city council's plans were met with some skepticism, though. Digital signage and LED lighting would cover the two huge buildings from top to bottom. Barbara Brody of the Coalition to Ban Billboard Blight said the signs could create a safety hazard to motorists on the 110 freeway.
You have abdicated your responsibility to protect our safety from these signs that are designed to catch the attention of all who pass.
The vast majority of the audience in City Hall, however, were excited about the redevelopment.
I just spoke to Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny, and they both support this project.
The existing Wilshire Grand Hotel is set to be demolished in December as part of the approved agreement. Mark Shore, Annenberg Radio News.
Tyson Foods and the Los Angeles Unified School District teamed up today to make a dent in the battle against hunger. A study released this month found that close to 20% of the Californians surveyed could not afford to adequately feed themselves or their families at least one time in 2010. Tanner Keith has more.
Tyson Foods in the Los Angeles School District donated 29,000 pounds of boneless chicken to the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank. That's $75,000 worth of chicken going to hungry families. In a study released this month, the Food Research and Action Center found that nearly one in five Americans struggled to buy enough food for themselves and their families. The study took place in 2010. David Binkle, the director of Food Services for Los Angeles Unified School District, says that more people need help in providing for their families.
The demand for food assistance has continued to increase. Our volume over the last 2 years has increased by more than, or nearly 60%, an increase in volume, food in and food out the door, helping people in the community. More than 1 million people reached.
And the study paints a similar picture. Nearly 1.7 million Angelenos receive emergency food assistance each year from the city's regional food bank. It's a nonprofit organization that gives close to 1 million meals each week to people struggling to make ends meet. AC Green, a former NBA star, now spends his time focused on his community.
It sort of breaks my heart when I think of, you know, we have almost 13,000 kids homeless right now, and that's children. This is not adults, which is bad enough, but we're talking kids. So, I don't know, I just hope it gets not only into their hands, but into their stomachs.
Close to 27% of Los Angeles residents in the study Residents of Maxine Waters' Congressional District 35 said that they could not afford enough food to feed themselves or their families on their own. Jim Wheel, the president of the FRAC, says that although there are still Americans struggling, we have the resources to eliminate hunger in this country. Tanner Keith, Annenberg Radio News.
The Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors met today to discuss a plan that they hope will address the needs of foster children beyond their 18th birthday. Britt Thorson reports.
The proposed youth self-sufficiency plan aims to meet the needs of the 1,800 youth who annually become ineligible for further care once they become legal adults. According to studies, within 2 years of this aging out, the majority become prone to homelessness, joblessness, and incarceration.
When a child is taken from his birth family and grows up in a multiple placement facility, only to age out years later without an alternative permanent family or committed adult, government has essentially discharged an 18-year-old youth to himself without skills, resources, or a place to go.
Supervisor Mayor Michael Antonovich's action plan proposes implementing the services across the county in order to connect these young adults to jobs, housing, and educational benefits which might not be available to them otherwise.
It starts planning a youth's departure from birth, and it says, how do we prepare this child to be an adult successfully, holistically? It's a long-term preparation for adulthood, rather than the limited preparation for emancipation.
Helen Berberian is Mayor Antonovich's social service deputy. She says the biggest challenge will be shifting the end goal of foster care away from emancipation, which is when the foster parents legally and financially end ties with the child. She calls this process one big checklist.
Do you have some place to live? Do you go to school? Do you have a job? Are you looking for a job? Good. Go. Have a good life.
That's what happened with Mercedes Boston. Boston went into foster care when she was 10 years old after her grandmother passed away of cancer.
Going house to house, it was very stressful because I knew I wasn't loved by people I stayed with.
After emancipating herself when she was 18, Boston was on her own for several years. She came across St. Anne's, a Catholic social service agency dedicated to helping young children, mothers, and families in need, and didn't look back.
And I just want to thank St. Anne's for real, for really believing in people and starting to get my trust back.
St. Anne's provides many of the same services Mayor Antonovich's plan proposes. Implementation of the plan is set to begin within the next 30 days. Britt Thorson, Annenberg Radio News.
Finally, that spring weather SoCal is known for has arrived. Clear skies tonight with lows in the mid-50s. Tomorrow and Thursday will be sunny and warm with temperatures in the low 80s. So keep those shorts, flip-flops, and Stena shades handy, Angelinos. Later on Annenberg Radio News, Los Angeles makes a commitment to help Japan rebuild. Community gardens might be a sprouting trend in Los Angeles, but one garden in West Adams wasn't just about a new movement. Years ago, its creators had a sole mission, to turn a neighborhood's troubled past into a promising future. Amanda Smith has more.
The community garden on Raymond Avenue in West Adams has been around for 3 years now, providing space for community residents to grow fresh produce for just $3 per plot.
This is another kind of communal area, which is fruit trees back here, an apple tree, peach, lemon, plum, and we have a banana that's got some bananas on it that are ripening.
In the spring sunshine, lush greenery coats the garden, and along the wood chip path, a cage of bunnies and compost stations can also be found. But the garden hasn't always looked this way.
Prior to my living here, it was kind of a gang hangout, and you know, there was a building that burnt down 20 years ago, and apparently that kind of sat around for a while. But it was just a big junky lot, lots of weeds, and people would dump stuff, and, you know, people would let their dogs run around, and just kind of an eyesore in the neighborhood.
That's Julie Burley. She was tired of viewing the empty lot and decided to turn it into something for the entire neighborhood to enjoy.
So I said, why doesn't somebody start a community garden? You know, that'd be a good idea. And just had a desire to connect with people in the community. And I really, really wanted to grow food. I got really into gardening after moving here.
What began as an idea has grown into a reality. Now the garden provides a place to grow for 30 families in the community. But getting a plot is competitive. Since its opening, the garden has always had a waiting list. But Burley thinks there's a reason for that.
People want to grow their food. It's a pretty tempting thing to want to do when you see it being done, like right in your neighborhood. You're like, how can I get a piece of that?
And that's exactly why Ashley Miller, a Raymond Avenue resident, first jumped on the opportunity of having a community garden.
Knowing what you put in your own vegetables and you didn't use no pesticides and anything like that, growing it all natural, really, it's like, oh, maybe that'd be a good idea instead of getting from the store. That's what baited me in.
Despite its popularity, the garden has had its struggles. Even as gardeners water their plants, the garden has issues with maintenance. In particular, the garden has been watered down with a lack of volunteers and limited financial support. But its influence continues to thrive in the community.
People watch out for each other, I think, a little bit more, and it's like obvious that it's cared for. So I think that affects everybody's sort of like feeling of, oh, this is a good place. And I think it kind of, you know, the garden helps to kind of spread the love a little bit.
And that aspect is key to the garden's success. And that's why community gardens like the one on Raymond Avenue are sprouting up throughout Los Angeles. Amanda Smith, Annenberg Radio News.
A study released by the Government Accountability Office suggests that the U.S. Postal Service could recoup some of its losses by ending mail service on Saturdays. The USPS operated at a loss last year, losing more than $8 billion. Post office officials expect that if Saturday service was cut, they could save an estimated $3 billion. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and local organizations gathered at the U.S.-Japan Council in Los Angeles today to discuss what the city can do to help the people of Japan. Whitney Blaine has the story.
Junko Uno, a clerk for the Japanese consulate in L.A., watched as Mayor Villaraigosa and city representatives talked about future efforts to aid Japan. She watched, but she didn't really listen. Her mind was on her best friend, whose life completely changed after the earthquake and tsunami. She says her friend lives about
80 kilometers in Tadaguramachi. It's a small town. Her daughter's preschool is, they can't use it anymore, so all the kids are going to have to probably transfer out to the other schools. Damaged beyond repair.
That's where Councilmember Richard Alarcon believes LA can help. He proposed holding events in the city to raise donations. And funds might be easy to come by. The consulate says LA County is home to the largest Japanese American population in the country.
It just breaks my heart because Fukushima is my home in Japan. I'm not from Japan, but I live there. So to me, that's home. I feel like I can't do anything. You know, donate money, but that doesn't go to her directly.
The mayor stressed that LA's relief efforts can't be temporary.
This isn't an issue that's going to be around for a month or 3 months or 6 months even. That in fact, we're going to all be living with this tragedy and the recovery for a very long time.
Yeah. I kind of feel like, but even when help goes there, they're going to go mostly, of course, to the towns that are hit hardest. So what about the people like her? You know, they don't have the things that they need, but they're not the most affected. And I don't want people to forget about them.
In addition to those struggling to make ends meet, there are still 16,000 people missing in Japan. If you'd like to donate, contact your nearest Red Cross. Whitney Blaine, Annenberg Radio News.
Much has been said about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in the media, but few truly understand the religious, cultural, and historical basis for many of the issues that plague the region today. A journalism class at USC's Annenberg School seeks to change this. I'm joined in the studio by Andrew Corey and Charisse Delgadillo, two Annenberg journalism students taking Diane Winston's Reporting on Religion class. They recently returned from a 10-day trip to Israel, where they witnessed firsthand various aspects of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Charisse, let's start with you. Tell me, what sticks out in your mind about this trip to Israel?
Well, I definitely did not realize what a role religion does play in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I think it's really easy for, you know, from an American perspective, to look at the Israeli conflict through policy issues and, you know, thinking that it has something to do with oil, maybe, and that type of speculation. We think that religion is a pretext, you know, to further this conflict or situation. But I think that when we go there, you really see that this is really a reality in people's minds. For example, like the Zionist movement, they really do see this as a religious movement to go into Israel and claim it as this holy land. And you also see a lot of Palestinians, for example, fighting to have access to go and visit these holy lands where they're not permitted to see.
Andrew, you've been working on a story about migrant workers in Israel. Tell me a little about that.
It's a very controversial subject at this moment. One documentary won an Oscar about a school that is dedicated solely to educating migrant workers' children. And a lot of these children right now are under the threat of deportation. And the right wing in Israel, they've criticized the migrant workers and having children as kind of a threat to the Jewish state. They come from mostly from Asia. They're not Jewish. And they have passed regulations that disallow giving birth if you're a migrant worker. So if you give birth, you have to send away the child within 3 months. And then from the other side, a lot of the NGOs have criticized some of these regulations for creating kind of a system where some sort of modern-day slavery. But what we've kind of been struck about is, I think, some of the tensions between having this democracy in Israel that is solely defined as an ethnic democracy, and whether those two things can, if you can have a democracy dedicated to a specific ethnicity. And I think a lot of times these two things conflict.
Do you find students here are aware of the situation to the level that you are now aware of it?
It's not something you hear a lot about. And I think a lot of, as far as the media goes, there's a lot of one side or the other. Whenever you come out and try to report as honestly as you can, one side will kind of attack you for that.
Andrew Corey and Charisse Delgadoya are two of the students in Diane Winston's Reporting on Religion class who continue to produce stories about religion's influence on policy in Israel. Now we check in with Caroline Vandegrift to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Sarah. Well, ATVN has a really exciting show tonight. We have an exclusive interview with the student who actually took the photos that have been circulating the internet, the infamous photos of the two students having sex on top of one of USC's most famous buildings. Also, we will bring you the scoop about the revenue changes in taxis. They have gone from $2.50 to $4, and LAX will triple in revenue because of that. Also, Hollywood star Zsa Gabor has been hospitalized. We will give you the update on that.
Great. Thanks, Caroline. That's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Julia Dang,
Stephanie Guzman,
Carl Nickenegg. Chris Foy is our producer. Jessica Flores is the executive producer for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News. I'm Sarah Erickson.